with you this morning. If you're visiting with us, thank you for coming out and being here. If you have questions after today's conference, please have members here or one of the elders, and they'll be happy to talk to you. Very excited about being here this morning with you and looking forward to this morning and this evening's lesson. Hope everyone had a great week and has had a warm month so far. We've had a lot of sunshine. Feels like Florida. Matter of fact, I think we're warmer than Florida most of the time right now, so that's exciting. Steve was getting on my toes a little bit this morning. I think he forgot, but I'm from Tennessee. And family, you know, sometimes we marry cousins and close ones down there. So, you know, the Harrod family, that seems pretty normal where I'm from. I'm kidding. It's not that bad in Tennessee. Even though my uncle is my second cousin, I'll leave it at that. This morning we're going to be talking about where should you pitch your tent. Now, not much of a camper. I'm not much of one putting a tent up. I can only recall two times doing it in the past 20 years. Both times I didn't feel very well after I did it, so I figured that's probably not a good thing for me. I like hotels. I like bell service, so I'm not much of a camper. But people do like it. I have friends who just went. I had a friend just went on a three-week camping trip. He was in a tent every night for 3 weeks. But you may pitch your tent in this beautiful little area in the woods like this. That'd be cool. Or you may do it on a lake. You know, that's beautiful. Maybe that's where you want to do it. Maybe you pitch a tent here. You know, the night and the light glow. I mean, that just seems so cool until you actually do it. But anyway. Or what about here? You know, you're on the top of a valley and you're looking through. Wow, that's a great place to do it. Or maybe you invite all your friends and you're in the woods here and you have tents everywhere. Maybe that's a place you'd like to pitch your tent. And maybe people enjoy doing that. Or maybe you're by yourself and you got this big mountain. Maybe you're going to pitch your tent there. Maybe that's somewhere that you would do it. This one I don't get, but maybe you're like, hey, I want to go pitch in the snow. And I'm not sure I understand that one. This one I could almost get to see the northern lights. Maybe you wanted to get out in the middle, and you know, that would be really cool, even though it's about 25 below zero. Stephanie would definitely have to be there. I wouldn't want to do that by myself. I'd be really cold, so maybe you want to do that. But sometimes maybe we don't pitch our tent in such beautiful places. Maybe we take risk. Notice the sign there. I'll let you read that. Maybe the person pitching their tent can't read. I don't know. Maybe you would wake up in the morning and a rock falls on you and you don't ever wake up again. This is probably not a good idea of where to pitch your tent. If there are signs that say bears are around, I don't know that I'd want to wake up to that. I don't think I'd want to be their food. Look at them. I mean, they got the coolers open. They're going through all the food. This next one, when you're pitching your tent, definitely not for me. Now, let me give you a minute to look at that, see if you can figure out what they're doing. They are rock climbing, and I guess they got tired, and so they just put their tents on the side of the rock, and they just hang there all night long. That is not where I'd want to pitch my tent. And I guess this person's waiting for the train to come in the morning. Probably not a good place to pitch your tent. And I could have went on and on with different places. Positive places and negative places to pitch your tent. And so if we go to Genesis chapter 13, verses 1 through 7, we see that, that Abraham has come out of the land, and he, in verse 1 here, and he's got his nephew with him. Maybe we'll read on. Verse 1. So Abram went out from Egypt to Negev, and his wife and all his belonged to him, and Lot with him. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, silver and gold, and he went on his journeys from Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there previously, where Abram called the name of the Lord. Now Lot went with Abram, also his flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not support both of them while living together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. And there was strife between the herdsmen and Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now the Canaanites and the Perizzites were living in the land of Sam. So, hey, things are going great. Abraham and Lot, the livestock is growing, the herds are growing, all their people are growing, their possessions are growing. But at some point, you got too much, right? And we get that, right? Sometimes you gotta split up. Sometimes you gotta separate. You got too much going on in one place. And so, very positive thing going on here. And so these two households are growing and they're doing really well. And so in Genesis chapter 13, 8 through 10, which we read through this morning, so we'll pick up in verse 8 again. And so Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarrels between you or me, or between our herdsmen or mine, for we're close relatives. It is not the whole land before you. Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." So Lot looked around, saw the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar, was well watered like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. You know, it's very interesting, this story. I always read this and I'm like, man, Lot, you know what? You look for the best and that's what you chose. And so that's what he did. He looked around and he said, "This is the best. I like you, Abram, but I'm taking this. Good luck on the other country that's not as good as where I want to be. I want the best land, the land that has everything in there." And so that's what he does. And then in verse 12, Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tent near Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. And so when we talk about where you're pitching your tent, there's a phrase here that is very interesting. While Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tent near Sodom. And so there were cities and there are lots of kings. And you're going to read in the next chapter, chapter 14, there's all kinds of kings and there's battles of these kings. And Sodom has a king and Gomorrah has a king. And anyway, there's all kinds of things. And so it doesn't tell us in that first text there when they're looking at the land. But Lot saw something. And maybe it was these different cities and everything that was there. But whatever the case was, it was appealing to the eye and it looked good. And so I want you to notice he pitched his tent near Sodom. And so we get to Genesis 14, and now these battles have taken place, and one of the kings come, and he actually takes Lot and his possessions and everything. And so Abram hears about this. And in Genesis 14, 11, it says, "And then they took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food supplies and departed. They also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions and departed, for he was living in Sodom." Where did he start off at? Well, first he started off with Abram out in the middle of nowhere. And then they split up, and then Lot did what? He pitched his tent near Sodom. We go about 12 plus years, from pitching his tent near Sodom. We know the war with the kings lasted about 12 years here, so maybe 12 to 14 years. In 12 to 14 years, where did Lot pitch his tent then? He wouldn't pitch his tent anymore. He was living in Sodom. Isn't that interesting? He goes from Abram in the middle of nowhere, pitching his tent near Sodom, to being living in Sodom. And so we skip through Genesis 15 and 16. There's promises to Abram and different things go on. We see that Melchizedek comes and different things happen. And so we really don't know what's going on when Lot goes back to Sodom. But we know the king comes back and we know lots of things are going on. And then we pick up and we start to find out what really has been going on these few years in Sodom. And so we pick up in chapter 18, verses 16 through 33. And so these angels come to him. And it says, "And then when the men arose from there, they looked towards Sodom, and Abram was walking with them to send them off. And the Lord said, 'Shall I hide from Abram, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed? For I've chosen him in order that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord, doing righteousness and justice, in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham, and he has spoken about him. And the Lord said, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. I will go down and see if they have done entirely according to its outcry, which has come to me. And if not, I will know. And so we see this outcry is coming. It seems like sin is just abounding in this city of Sodom. This city that at one point Lot had pitched his tent toward, now he is living in. Verse 22. Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom while Abraham was still standing before the Lord. And Abraham came near and said, wilt thou indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? And Abraham, in verse 24, and suppose there were 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou indeed sweep away and not spare the place for the sake of 50 righteous are in it? Far be it from thee to do such a thing, to slay righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Far be it from thee, shall they not judge all the earth and deal justly? So the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare the whole place on their account. And Abraham answered and said, now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord, although I am not dust and ashes. Suppose 50 righteous are lacking 5. Wilt thou destroy the whole city because of 5? He said, I will not destroy if I find 45 there. And he spoke to him yet again and said, suppose there are 40 are found there. And he said, I will not do it on the count of 40. Then he said, oh, may the Lord not be angry. I shall speak, suppose there are 30 found there. He said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there. He said, I will not destroy it on the count of 20. Then he said, oh, may the Lord not be angry. And shall I speak only this once? Suppose 10 are found there. And he said, I will not destroy it in the count of 10. And as soon as he had finished speaking to Abraham, the Lord departed, and Abraham returned to his place. I want you to think about this place, this city. This city that Lot at one point saw from a distance and pitched his tent near, and a city in which he moved into, where it seems like they're not even 10 righteous in the entire city. What do you suppose should have come apparent to Lot while he's living there? Maybe this is not a good place to raise a family, because we know he's going to have grown children here in a little while that we're going to see. He's been there a while. I mean, at some point, you're going to look around and you're going to be like, you know what? I think I'm going to go down to this other place or other city, or maybe somewhere near Abraham. Yet he didn't. Yet he stayed. I'm not sure why. Maybe his wife wanted to stay, which we will see later. Maybe that's the case. Maybe his kids wanted to stay. Maybe that was the case. But at some point, somebody has to say, you know what? This is not working for us and our family. And this is going to have dire consequences on us and our life. And sometimes we talk about that when we make a move, when we take a job, what we do. How is this going to affect our family? What are we pitching our tent toward? And I hear stories of Christians that say, oh, I just got a job making $1 million a year. Where are you moving? Well, I'm moving to such and such city. Is there a church? No, there's no church there. I'm going to start one. Well, maybe you will. I'm going to take all my family there. And there's decisions that we make all the time that are like that. And I think it's important that we see from this text, how is this going to affect us? And we're fixing to find out. But how is this going to affect our family? How is this going to affect us spiritually? Where are we pitching our tent? We see Lot here pitched his tent towards Sodom, ultimately moved in to Sodom. And so we look here in verses 19, verses 1 and 2, and it says, the two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. And so we see that Lot must have been maybe prominent, I don't know, he's sitting there in the gateway. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. My lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet, spend the night, and go on your way early in the morning. No, they answered, we'll spend the night in the square. And so, for whatever reason, and I think I know why, Lot's like, oh, no, you need to come and stay in my house. This is probably not a safe place. He didn't tell him that, but we're going to find out here in a minute. And the angel's like, no, No, we're going to stay right in the middle of the square. We're going to stay in the middle of the town. And I think that Lot doesn't want that to happen. Of course, Lot is a very good man. And then you turn over to verse 3 in chapter 19. And we see the destruction here. And so, yet he urged them strongly. So they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he prepared a feast for them. And he baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded his house, both young and old, and all the people from every quarter. And they called the lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came into you tonight? Bring them out to us, that we may have relations with them." But Lot went out to them in the doorway and shut the door behind them and said, "Please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Now behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with a man. Please let me bring them out, and you do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men, inasmuch they have come under the shelter of my roof." But they said, "Stand aside." Furthermore, they said, "This is one that came in as an alien and already is acting like a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them." So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break the door. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them, and they shut the door. And they struck the men who were in the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. Then the men said to Lot, "Whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in this city, bring them out of this place. For we are about to destroy this place because there is an outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it." And Lot went and spoke to his son-in-laws, who were to marry his daughters, and said, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But he appeared to his sons-in-laws to be jesting. And when in morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in punishment of the cities." But he hesitated, so the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hand of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out, and they put him outside the city. What did Lot go in to Sodom when he pitched his tent? What did he have? Do you guys recall what he had? He had a lot. The herds were so great that they couldn't even be together. Abraham says, "We got to split it." And he had all kinds of men working for him. And he had all this stuff. He found himself living in Sodom. What did he leave Sodom with? Or what does it appear to be leaving Sodom with right now? His wife and his two daughters. That's right now all he's going to be leaving Sodom with, as we can see here. And the compassion of the Lord was with him, and he was hesitating himself. And in verse 17, it came about when they had brought them outside that the one said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, lest you be swept away." But Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords. Now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown to me, saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest this disaster overtake me and I die. Now behold, his town is near enough to flee, and it's small. Please let me escape there. It is not small, that my life may be saved." And he said to them, "Behold, I grant you this request also, not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." Therefore the name of the town was called Zoar. Then the sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, stone fire, and the Lord of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and the valley and all inhabitants of them back. And she became a pillar of salt. Now Abraham arose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord. And he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward the land of the valley. And he saw, behold, the smoke of the land as it ascended like smoke in a furnace. Thus it came about when God destroyed the cities of the valley that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst to overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. I don't know what this looked like, but I can imagine that this is a famous artwork piece here describing it, and you can see where they're trying to get away and not looking back, but just destroying it, laying waste to this. And so Lot goes in with a lot, and he comes out with just his two daughters in the end. And if you continue to read, and I encourage you to do that in verse 30 and on, we see that the city even affected his daughters. And his daughters did some things that they shouldn't have been doing. And it seemed like his whole family, and it seemed like only in the end that maybe Lot was the only one that became righteous. Where are we pitching our tent? You see, Lot had a whole lot, his family, he had everything going for him. But he saw something over here that he thought was amazing, and he pitched his tent toward it. And ultimately he found himself in the middle of the city, only to find himself 20 years later fleeing with only him and his wife and two daughters. And so you can see where you choose to pitch your tent will have consequences. Where you choose to reside, or where you choose to live, or where you choose to surround yourself with will affect you. And will have consequences, and long-lasting consequences. So what does Sodom and Gomorrah look like today? Now, obviously, I can't pinpoint exactly. But it's somewhere at the bottom of the Dead Sea, to the east coast of the Dead Sea, somewhere in that area. There's a lot of salt, by the way, in the Kent's the Dead Sea area. Some speculate that, here, or maybe there's this mound, maybe that was at... Maybe it's this salty area around the Dead Sea. I mean, it's not like there's an actual, here's the capital and this is where the city square was at and this is where Lot lived. But there's nothing there anymore. Let's put it that way. It got wiped off, and it's still wiped off the face of the earth. And so I ask you this simple question this morning. Where are you pitching your tent today? Where are you pitching your tent? Are you pitching your tent near a place like Sodom and a place like Gomorrah, or are you pitching your tent in a direction toward God? And that's a question that we've all got to ask ourselves, and we got to evaluate in our lives, where is our tent being pitched right now? Or who are we pitching our tent with? And so I've got four simple points. Number one, are you pitching your tent toward the world? There are a lot of people who are doing that. They're all in. They're all in with the world. They're pitching their tent toward the world. They're devoting their whole life to the world. And they're saying, "Oh, well, I'm not gonna come out, getting caught with this. It's not gonna affect me. It's not gonna, nothing's gonna be there." Matthew 16, 25 through 27. "For whoever wishes to save his life and lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his glory, and his Father and his angels, and will pay every man according to his deeds." Let's just say so happen you get the whole world. What did Lot see? He saw the most beautiful land. He saw the most beautiful everything. This is awesome. I'm going to take it. And he lost everything because he saw something. And it was there. He says here, even if you gain the whole world, what have you won? What have you got if you lose your soul in the process? And so many times we flirt with the world and we think about it. And I tell you what, I got into small farming. I think they call it gentleman farming, not real farming. And at one point, it's a funny story. I was going to buy 10 calves in Florida. Drove down by myself. Wound up calling Stephanie and got a good deal. When you get a good deal, you got to take advantage of it. I bought 50. I didn't even really have room in the trailer for 50 calves. But anyway, I bought them. Called her up and said, "I got 50 calves coming. Don't even know where I'm going to put them. But I got 11 hours to figure that out." And so in the process of doing that, you begin feeding calves. And you get dirty all the time. And you're bucketing everything. And so I got... Doing you had to feed bottle calf that many calves, you get kind of tired of it, and you start figuring out ways not to do it. But I came up with a theory, and I don't have calves now, but I said, one of these days I'm going to have it all set up where I can walk out in a white suit, and I won't get any dirt on me. I can feed everything, and I'll come out clean. Now, how many people think I can walk in a barn feeding calves in a white suit? You can do it. And that's the same thing about the world. We can't. How do we think we can flirt with the world, we can live with the world, we can do everything with the world, and we're like, you know what? I'm not going to get any on me. I'm not going to get any of the world on me. It's not going to affect me or my kids or anybody around me. I'm going to be able to just not have any of that on me. That's pitching your tent towards Sodom and thinking nothing's going to happen. We can't do that. We can be in the world, but not of the world. Toward immoral people. If a human, 1 Corinthians 15, 32 through 34. If from human motives I fought with wild beasts at Ephesus, what does it profit me? If the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. You know, that's what people say. Oh, you know, let's just party it up. Our friends are saying, you know, nothing's going to happen. Verse 33, but Paul says, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Become sober-minded as you ought and stop sinning. For some have no knowledge of God. I speak this to you in your shame. I have a really good friend, and I got to see this friend a couple weeks ago. And we're friends in college. He's a Christian, and his dad and mom are Christians. His sister's a Christian. All of his friends were Christians, but I don't know. He wanted to get these other friends, I guess, that were more fun. And so he over a period of time he started getting these other friends, and. You know, he got married, and I was in the wedding, and all of our friends were in the wedding. But he kept getting these other friends, and these other friends, and these other friends. And these other friends led him to an affair on his wife. It led him to multiple things. It led him to drinking. It led him to doing all kinds of things. His health, and I mean, it's just a complete mess. And I could go on for 30 minutes about how these friends and wealth and money and activities have just been a very destructive thing to his life. Where are we pitching our tent with our friends? If you look around and the majority of your friends are not Christians, I don't want to be a wake-up call here. I don't want to be judgmental, but where are you pitching your tent? Paul says, do not be deceived. Okay, if he's telling you not to be deceived, then what's that mean you can be? I mean, I'm not a grammar person by any means, and definitely not anything in writing. But what's the opposite of being not deceived is being deceived. Paul says, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. If the majority of the people that you are hanging out with 7 days a week, 365, are not Christians, what do you think that's? Gerald, that can have no effect. You're being deceived. Gerald, they're not going to influence. You're being deceived. Paul says it. Do not be deceived. Where are you pitching your tent? Where are you pitching your tent? Toward your family? I'm going to take a little turn on this. Yes, I hope you do pitch your tent toward your family. But look here in Luke 15, 25 through 27. Now large crowds were among him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and his mother and his wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciples. Whoever does not carry his own cross after me cannot be my disciples. I have people with and family that say, yeah, you know what? Sorry, Gerald, you know, what you're saying is true. I get it. I know there are things I need to do. But my family has been part of ex-church or ex-community for 150 years, and I'm a fourth generation, blah, blah, blah. You know what? That's what I'm going to be, and that's what my kids are going to be, and that's what I'm going to do. Or, Gerald, if I do that, my family will disown me. My family won't have anything to do with me. Where are you pitching your tent? You're pitching your tent towards your family to let them make decisions for you and your spiritual welfare? Or are you pitching your tent toward God? And that's the last one here. Here's the question. Are you pitching your tent toward God in all the things that you do? Where did Lot pitch his tent? You see, he was a long way away from Sodom. But where did he wind up? Where did he wind up? Matthew chapter 11, 27 through 29. All things have been handed over to me by my Father. And no one knows the Son except the Father. Nor does anyone know the Father except the Son. And anyone to whom the Son wills to reveal him. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. Ladies and gentlemen, there is only one place that we should be pitching our tent toward, and that's toward God, and that's toward Jesus, who died for each and every one of us. And if your tent is not pitched toward him, then you're putting your tent in the wrong place. You're putting your tent somewhere it shouldn't be. You're putting your tent in a dangerous place, whether it be with the bears we showed a while ago, or hanging off of a cliff, or putting it under a rock. You're putting it in a dangerous place that will have consequences like Lot's consequences, to where he lost everything but his two daughters. And I don't know how it ended with them, and ultimately, but he might have lost them too. And he went into Sodom with so much. And this morning, you know, the first steps to pitching your tent toward God. And we see in Acts 2, we see the conversions all through Acts, the seven of them. And what we see there is that you got to hear and understand the Word of God. And ultimately, by doing that, we believe in the Word of God and we repent. Repent is turning around. Repent is changing. Repent is doing a 360. Any military guys, repenting is doing an about face. You're going in one direction and you're turning and you're saying, you know what, that direction is not good. Maybe you're pitching your tent over here and you're like, you know what, that's going to get me hurt. And I want to move my tent and I want to move it over here and I want to move it in a different direction. And then being baptized. We see that Jesus died and was buried and raised, and we too are buried in baptism and raised and ultimately remaining faithful. Pitching your tent toward God can be best summed up in Matthew 6:33. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. If anyone is subject to the invitation, please come now as we stand and sing.